This is Renee Sear doing an interview with Camille on July 11th, 2019, discussing paganism in Lawrence. All right. How do you define your religion and spiritual path?
To define my religion would be, the umbrella term is paganism, but that means anything that's out of Judaism or Christianity or Catholicism, technically. I would be classified as a Wiccan. I'm very nature-based, but I also incorporate a specific goddess that I like to make offerings to, and she makes me feel protected and safe. And I think everybody, deep down inside, inherently, humans need to believe in something higher than themselves, not just for accountability of what happens to them in life, but the idea that we're just here alone on this big planet, it's kind of sad. So I think people are naturally drawn to religious idols. Mine would be Hecate.
How long have you practiced paganism?
Since 2002. I discovered it while I was going to high school. When I was younger, I was forced to go to Catholic school. My family is Romani, Gypsy, and Italian on my mom's side, so they're very much about adopting a major religion to kind of help us blend in more. And my grandmother and my mother actually really did take it to heart. It wasn't just like a chameleon tactic to blend in. And going to Catholic school, I realized that it just didn't feel right. Like, I would leave church feeling worse than when I went in. And I kept thinking to myself when I was small that religion shouldn't feel like this. Like, you should feel better when you're done doing a church session or a ritual or a healing or a group thing that you do. And I just never felt that in Catholicism. I always felt like I was being judged. It was very cold, and you felt isolated, even though you were amongst hundreds of people in your church. Everybody secretly was judging each other. I wanted to find a faith that felt more free. And so when I found paganism, I realized that you can be free. And you can worship in any way that you feel. You don't have to be in a church in stuffy windows, you know, surrounded by, I mean, obvious pagan symbols and Masonic symbols. Those are really prevalent in the Catholic Church, and it's because they kind of did like a network and a mishmash and created their own little religious quilt that suited them for their times. But it never changed as the times went on for the people. And paganism does. It's very much alive. It evolves. It moves. It transitions. And what works for one person may not work for another person. But the core belief for the paganism is the acceptance of self. So if I want to worship, I can just stand outside in my garden barefoot and feel the earth beneath my feet and take care of my plants. To me, that could be worshiping. It could be going out to the ocean for another pagan and picking up litter to help the earth. I mean, really, it's all about helping other people, feeling that connection and knowing that you're actually not isolated. You're not alone on this tiny little rock. You are connected, because without the earth, we wouldn't be here. And so there's like a big sense of comfort in knowing that when I see it snowing, or when I see the seasons change, or if I'm gardening, or I help a bird that needs, you know, that's in a dire situation, like it's broken its wings. By giving back to creatures and giving back to other people, I believe that's truly what paganism is about.
Okay. Was there a particular book or personal contact that influenced you to begin your path down paganism?
I would say there's a very big experience, like a catalyst for me casting Catholicism aside before transitioning. And that moment was when my father died when I was nine. He committed suicide, and I was praying for him in church. And a priest actually stopped and asked me what I was praying for. And I told him, you know, I'm praying for my dad. And he goes, well, is he sick? I said, no, he died. And he goes, oh, I'm sorry, child. You know, how did he die? And I said, well, he killed himself. And he goes, well, no amount of prayers is ever going to help. If you take a human life, even your own, you're condemned to hell. He goes, did he repent? And I said, well, he was a Catholic. And he goes, well, then maybe you should pray for other things that are more likely to happen. It was like wishing one hand and shit in the other one. It's like, who are you to tell me this? I'm just a child. And so I left the church crying, and I went to where I always felt comfortable as a child, and that was the library. And I found a section of religion theology, and I was reading about the Egyptian gods, and I was reading about the Romans and how they conquered and conquested everything under the sun, aside from Spain.
Yep.
And I was looking at all these different forms of religion. I read about Taoism, and I read about Buddhism, and I was like, what's the difference between Islam and Muslims? Like, is one a person? Is one a religion? And I was starting to ask all these questions at like 9 and 10. And the more I read, the more fascinated I became. And I kept thinking, well, these have so many rules, and I wasn't born into Judaism. And unless someone marries me, I really can't convert. Even then, women only learn so much. And, you know, I don't think I would qualify to be a Buddhist. And so it was like a self-mission. Like, first I had to decide, who am I and what did I want to be and what could these religions give me that I could give back. I wanted a reciprocating relationship. And so I would go with my friends to like different churches. Like, one was a Presbyterian, one was a Baptist. And one came from a very loud belief system, which I went to a funeral and it didn't feel like a funeral. Like, people were like singing and they were dancing and they looked happy. And that was like a second catalyst for me. It's like, even though there's this terrible situation, they're not mourning, they're not suffering, they're celebrating this person's life. And I was like, that's what I want. I want a belief in like that. But what was it? Where was it? And I found paganism. And the more I read about it, the more I remembered that before my grandmother had converted, my family only wore the Catholic emblem as a sign of protection. And that's when I was like, well, what did they believe before they became Catholic? And that's when I really dove into it. And I found a trunk of my grandmother's belongings. And it turns out she was still wearing the badge, but her daughter, my mother, had taken it more seriously than she had. But I found pagan relics. I found a mortar and pestle. I found dried herbs and little vials. I found pretty much every magazine edition of Myth and Magic. I found books on candle burning. And I called my Aunt Debbie. She was my father's sister. And I was telling her, hey, this is what I found in my mother's thing. Like, what do you think? Because my father's side was really interesting. My grandfather's a Freemason, and I actually joined the Daughters of the Eastern Star recently, so I'm the female sect of what Freemasonry is.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandmother on my dad's side was Mormon. So those were like really conflicting religious beliefs. So one side I had a Mason, another side I had a Mormon, another side I had a Catholic, and then I found out that we were like pseudo-Catholic. And it's like, it was even more confusing. And then it made me realize one really interesting thought. If you look at religion, and you imagine that you're holding a giant diamond in your hands, and it's perfectly carved. If you turn the diamond one way, there's Buddhism. If you turn the diamond another way, there's a Catholic. If you turn it this way, there's an Odinist, which is a form of pagan. If you turn it to the right, it's Gardnerian, which is another form of paganism. So all religions are different facets of the same diamond, if you really look at it. A lot of them have the same core beliefs. A lot of them even have very similar stories. They just change the time and the place so that it adapts to the people of that area. And so when I really started thinking about this, like, really, truly, no religion is wrong or right, because we're all different facets of the same diamond. And the diamond is hope. It's love. It's how can we help one another? How can we help ourselves? What's the real meaning of existence in this life? And so if you think about it, we're all just different parts of one diamond. And it's a really beautiful thought for me.
Oh.
And I was like, so what side is my diamond? And paganism's always felt right. It feels free. When I run barefoot through the field, I feel fine. If I'm in the forest under a full moon and I'm doing ritual with a group, that's fantastic. I feel free with paganism. And I think that's what really draws me.
Hmm. Are you currently a member of a coven or a group?
So I'm actually a solitaire. I do my own thing for the most part, but I have an open invitation to about 3 or 4 different coven. So if I feel like socializing, I'll contact the group in Topeka, and I always have an open invite there. If I feel like going out to the Web of Oz, I just contact Malus or Turtle, or they're more traditional, they go by more pagan names than their actual names. And that's another topic for today. But I know that I can shadow Carrie's group if I wanted to. If I really needed to, I can reach out to Casey, make amends, and then go out there as well. Or I can just go out to Gaia and do one of the group rituals that's available, and then meet people from all different walks of life. And if I want to find another group, I just go to a metaphysical shop or the mind-body-spirit fair. That's how you meet people. In order to find them, you have to go to what they like. So if you know there's a shop that sells lots of pretty rocks, they're probably there. Or if there's the cat adoption or anything to do with like humanitarian purposes, you'll almost always find pagans there.
Yeah. Let's see. Growing up, how aware were you of other faith traditions? So you were researching religions. Do you feel like you had
one grandmother was Mormon, another grandmother was Catholic. My grandfather on my mom's side was actually Presbyterian growing up. So they all kind of shared different parts of their beliefs. And my grandfather, who was a Freemason, obviously, he didn't tell me a whole lot about it. He just told me that when I became of age, if I wanted to join, there was an avenue for women. But due to the Mason kind of private and the secrecy and stuff behind it, it's really not a lot of secrecy. It's just a lot of rituals, and they feel that if they share what they are with everybody, then everybody knows, and it's not special. They want you to go in and earn it and have that dedication to learning all the things that they have. And I had a lot of respect and rapport for that.
And do you feel like that's a good complement to your Wiccan, Wiccan and paganist practices?
I think paganism is more open to occult type things. I think they're more open to forms of divination, scrying. I think they're more open to the idea of having a spiritual connection with specific animals, like totems. There's a lot of linear beliefs that translate over from Native American religion into paganism. But like I said, paganism is just an umbrella term. So there are some that worship Egyptian deities, and there are others that worship Greeks or Roman gods. It's just kind of, it's like Burger King, you know, your way.
What would you say are the defining characteristics of your particular practice?
Everybody knows what the golden rule is, or do unto others as you would have them do unto you. In paganism, we have a term called rule of three. And the rule of three is whatever intention you put out there, you get back 3 times. So if you're inherently a good person and you try to help others, then perhaps when you need help the most, maybe fate will smile upon you a little kinder than the others and help you out. But say that you have a coworker that you don't like, and your coworker is kind of an asshole, right? And you're like, oh, every day you go into work and you're like, oh, I hope he gets fired. Oh, I hope he leaves. I mean, if you go in there with that negativity every day and those ill intentions, and one day he does get fired, I'm not saying that you had the capability or the power to get him fired, but you put in that energy, that negativity towards another person or another creature, and because you focus so much on that, maybe after, Timmy gets fired, your car breaks down. Or maybe you're laid off, or your boyfriend or girlfriend breaks up with you. I'm not saying that that's a catalyst or that that's what caused those events to happen. But you get what you put out there. So if you put out negativity and you're always negative, you're going to draw negative things to yourself. So you're kind of a living, breathing magnet. You get what you put into the universe or your local community. So when I see people walk by homeless people and they shrug and they glare at them, I'm like, who are you to judge them? Maybe all they need is just someone to give them a hand up instead of a hand out. And so when I see things like racism and bigotry in the world, it just makes me sad, because that person behind the angry post or behind the blog is focusing so much negativity. It makes me wonder, what's their life like on a daily? Because you get what you put out. And so I think the rule of three is a really big core belief for me.
And so you mentioned that you tend to worship Hecate. Are there other gods and goddesses that you incorporate in your worship?
No, there are other ones that I'm interested in, just to, like, I like researching occult stuff. But Hecate seems to be my goddess of choice. She's the goddess of crossroads. She's known as the three-faced goddess, which means the past, present, and future, or mother, maid, and crone. She's the three parts of a person's life. You know, we're very young and we're children, we become mothers, and then we age. And I like the fact that she incorporates all those things. She's also the goddess of witchcraft and, you know, paganism and occultism, or whatever it is you want to call it. And she's also the goddess of the crossroads. And I believe that we go through a series of crossroads in our life. If you look up her mythology, she took in a dog and a cat, and I believe they call it an ermine. And those were other goddesses that had been punished or cast aside. Instead of letting them wander through the woods for whatever it was that happened to them, she actually took them in. So she is actually the gatherer of lost souls. And I think everybody's a little lost in this life. And she's also the one that helps transition from life to death. And so she's there in all aspects, in all parts of your life. Is she one that I would mess with? No, she's a little grumpy. She's got some vengeance things going on. But who doesn't? She kind of teaches you how to embrace it. But what I do appreciate about her, what's a little different than some gods and goddesses that people worship, is Hecate gives you the right to defend yourself. And I know that may contradict the rule of three, but hear me out. So a lot of goddesses and goddesses like are very, it's a fluffy bunny religion, you know. Oh, well, this person is the goddess of the rainbow, and everything is always happy, and there's love and light, and there's baby bunnies and shit everywhere. And it's like, that's not the reality of life. So that, like, when gods and goddesses are super fluffy bunny and stuff, like, it doesn't appeal to me. And so Hecate allows you to defend yourself. So if someone is verbally attacking you, or you are attacking yourself, I mean, sometimes our worst enemies are ourselves, she allows you to defend yourself. I'm not saying go out and attack people, but it's a little different than some of the other things that people worship in paganism. A lot of them are like turn the cheek, or, you know, look the other way, or just go by the rule of three only. And to me, that's not the reality of life. So Hecate is very appealing to me.
Nice. And do you believe in and seek assistance from other supernatural beings?
Gaia is a big one, of course, but I think most pagans worship Gaia because of the nature aspect. I also kind of acknowledge that there is, like, a keeper of the day, there is a keeper of the night. I believe in a lot of supernatural spirits, like, we're all made up of energy. And so when we pass away, like, who's to say that you don't get lost or you don't get stuck and you didn't make it to Summerland? You know, you felt that there was something on this realm that was incomplete. Or you were taken so quickly that you didn't realize that you're gone. And so I believe that there are a lot of things in this world that we maybe don't understand. I think a lot of things that are based off of mythology have a certain amount of truth to it. You know, it's kind of like that telephone game. One rumor starts out one way, and then, you know, it gets convoluted and changes. The Bible. And kind of like pagan myths and urbans and beliefs. So right now, I mostly just focus on Hecate.
Nice. And what are your beliefs about the afterlife?
So a lot of pagans believe in a Summerland. And I like to believe in that concept too. It's like the pagan version of heaven. You know, you go there and it's always your favorite season, and you're surrounded by maybe your old pets and your old friends and people that you've encountered in this lifetime, or maybe in another lifetime, who's to say. But I personally, I like the concept of Summerland, but I believe that we make our own heaven or our own hell, or our own Summerland or our own Hades. If you hold on to regret and disdain and anger your whole life, and you just dwell on all the negative things that happened to you, how can you really grow as a spirit and move on? So maybe to one person, Hades is going to that same office job they had when they were 45 that they hated every day. Maybe that's their personal Hades. Maybe someone's version of Summerland, you know, if they moved on and they didn't have regrets and they weren't angry about things or sad. Maybe their Summerland is watering in the garden on a June morning in which they just felt complete and happy. So I personally think we make our own.
And do you believe in reincarnation?
I do believe in reincarnation. I think that a lot of people think, oh, well, it's a body with a spirit. And I think the reverse. I think we're spirits and bodies. And I think in order to grow and to evolve and to become better spirits, to be more connected to people on Earth, I think that we have to go through a series of lifetimes and a series of lessons. And if you didn't quite learn the lesson the first time, then, you know, maybe you come back and you do it again. But it's not a form of punishment. It's a form of how can we progress? How can we move on to the next step? And that same concept can be applied to anything, like science or politics or economics, you know. How can we work to evolve, to move on to the next level, and maybe leave our spirit better than the way that we found it the first time, or leave the earth better than the way we found it?
And do you embrace the label witch? How do you see your religion with ideas of witchcraft and magic?
When I say things like, I'm Wiccan, if other pagans are around, they're like, oh, that's like the fluffy bunny, she's all hippie and stuff, maybe she doesn't shave or she wears nag chapa. When I tell people, oh yeah, you know, I'm a witch. Witch has such a negative connotation to it still, even to this day. But if you say, people are like, oh, okay, I'm good. So if you say a pagan, if someone is well-educated, which doesn't roll the dice these days, they'll understand that that means anything outside of Christianity, Catholicism, and Judaism. You know, it was outside of the three core beliefs that originated on one side of the world, when you have, like, Islamic and everything, too, where jinn come from and things like that. But if I say I'm pagan, people seem to accept that pretty well. I do not like the term warlock, because that actually translates to oath breaker. It's very slanderous and kind of shitty for people to say. So when you see people posting on the internet, they're like, oh, I'm a warlock. It's like, no, you're full of shit. And you're some creepy little guy that, you know, plays D&D in his mom's basement. You're probably 45 years old. And you've been reading one too many little occult books in the basement. Like, you need to come up for some air and meet some real pagan son. So when you see terms like that, it's like a big red flag that there's something not right with that person. If anybody and their mom is running around claiming to be a priestess or a high priest, it's all bullshit. Unless you are actually in charge of a coven and you are actively, you know, teaching and inspiring others in your group, you can't just call yourself a high priestess or a high priest. And really, the high priest is only there to assist the high priestess. It's almost kind of like a matriarch system in a way. So there are many key terms and red flags in this community that maybe people aren't aware of. And so, and also the term witch, it can be applied to if someone's a voodoo priestess, they can also use the term witch, or Satanist, or Luciferian, because there is a difference between those two. A lot of people don't know that either for some reason.
Yeah.
And they can call themselves witches as well. And so witch has become a term that's got negative connotations to it, because people don't understand basic witchcraft, they don't understand voodoo, they don't understand Satanism, they don't understand Luciferians. And we're not the same. We're our own little spider webs, you know, each corner. And so witch just has a negative bitterness to it still, even to this day. Which is insane. So I prefer pagan.
Yes. How active would you say you are in terms of your religious practice?
I practice every day, and it doesn't have to be anything big. It can just be me watering the garden or giving a dollar to a homeless person. It can be me simply closing my eyes and enjoying the breeze and smelling when the lavender and the lilac bloom in the spring. It can be anything, as long as it's nature and it has good intentions. I think that's the most important aspect, is the intention.
Mm-hmm.
I've recently written a novel. I'm trying to get it published. Right now I'm a nobody in the writer's world, so I don't exist. And so I've written a series of 4 short stories in lieu of the novel. I try to get one of those short stories published because my ultimate goal is to get that novel published. And it's about 16th century Germany during the burning times. It's a Romani woman who was a midwife and a healer in her village, and she's accused of witchcraft, and she had taken in wayward children that had been abandoned in the woods, because that's what they did back then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not everybody had a cliff like Sparta. You know, you could just kick the baby over the cliff. Sometimes you just left it in the woods, out the fox eater or something, I don't know. But she collects these children that are left in the woods by her home. And people purposely leave them there, knowing that she'll take them in. And so when she's accused of witchcraft, out of 4 of her children, 2 of them are caught with her. And I go through the process of, how was someone accused of witchcraft? Why were they accused of being a witch? And then how did they get from being accused to being arrested? How were they transported? And then when they got to where they were being held, what were the conditions really like? I wanted to do it from a first-person point of view. And so they go through the interrogation, and they torture her, and they beat her. They go through the mock trial, which was always just kind of bullshit, because it was already biased. They already knew what they were going to do to these women.
Yeah.
It didn't matter what she said or didn't say. She was still a witch in their eyes. And it could have been based off of something as petty as she was a single woman after her husband passed away, and she refused to remarry but wanted to keep her land. And say the neighbor wanted her property and said, hey, I'll buy it from you. And she said, no, this is all I've got. Well, damn, she's a witch because she has something I want. And screw her, she's just a woman. Because that was the mentality back in the day. And with the recent abortion things, I wish I could say the mentality has changed towards women. Still has it. We have the right to vote, but we're not really heard. But that's another topic. So the woman is accused, they arrest her, they take her in, they torture her, and then they burn her at the stake with 2 of her children. And at the very end, I split the point of view. You see the point of view from her at the stake, and I describe the way that she feels and the things that she's seeing, and she's getting little flashbacks because she's kind of coming in and out from, you know, the pain she went through. And then the other point of view is the children that were able to escape. They're watching them. And people say, well, why would you write something so horrific? And I said, well, because it's part of history.
Mm-hmm.
That's what really happened. And unfortunately, people are kind of whitewashing history nowadays. Like, one of the children I taught last year at a different district that I won't name showed me the history book that they were reading. And the history book read, the Native Americans willingly relocated to assist the pilgrims in expanding their territory. And I read this, and I said, willingly? They said, they willingly relocated. And I was like, well, that's a bunch of bullshit, because what about the Trail of Tears? What about all the times that people rounded them up and separated them from their families and, so to say, whitewashed them and, you know, forbid them to speak in their own language and gave them names? I mean, history has a habitual practice of excluding certain people at specific times. And you think that as an evolved human race that we would have learned from this now, but obviously we haven't. When you see children right now that are crossing the borders, they're seeking sanctuary, that are being thrown into cages. Innocent children. So we still haven't learned. We're supposed to be so evolved, but yet we're doing the same thing continuously. So by me writing this book, that's just one chapter of what humans have done to each other. I mean, there were entire villages in Germany that had no women in them because they were all burned at the stake. And they would burn the one healer they had in the village, and then all of a sudden everybody's got smallpox or influenza or, you know, Jeremiah or Jebediah or whatever religious name you want to throw on it, you know, has a broken leg, and oh my God, it's gangrene. What do we do? Well, shit, you burned the healer. What do you think you did? Like, so that's the whole purpose of writing that book.
Do you consider your beliefs to be more of a religion or a spiritual practice?
I'd say the religious aspect. By saying religion, it identifies a set core of beliefs and set rules. And there are rules that I operate by. Like when I set up my altar, you know, I have a specific place where I have to put earth and where I have to put fire. And where I have to put water when, and that can be like a little vial of water or a feather. You know, so the religious aspect of it, I do follow that, but not like to a T. Like, it doesn't have to be specific. So for me, I'd say the religious aspect is about 30% of it, and then the rest of it is spiritual. Because it's, how do I feel for the day? What do I want to do? What do I need?
Do you think that mentality makes it harder to get the government to recognize paganism as a religion?
Well, it is recognized. I mean, people that are in the military,
beginning, yes,
they can have a pentacle or a pentagram, and there's a big difference between the two. People still don't know that either. But they can have that applied to their dog tag. Now, what does that mean? It means that hopefully when they ship that poor soldier's body, man or woman, or trans, because trans people have a right to be in the military too, damn it. I don't care what gender they are. If they wanted to send this crooked-ass country, then they should have the right to, and then they should be taken care of when they're done defending the country, unlike what we do to our fucking vets. Go fight a war and blow away innocent people and babies, but when you get back, if you need to talk about it, no, we're not giving you therapy. We're just going to medicate you until you're just a zombie. Screw that. So. This is not. But we should be recognized. But we're very much like stray cats. We're kind of everywhere. And because it's not super supported, it's not like we have a pagan community center. Although I would love to head that up. That would be fantastic. It's not like we have a place where other pagan groups can come and meet and participate in one day ritual. You know, we have Gaia, but you can only do that seasonally because of outdoors. You know, what if we wanted to have a ritual with 1,000 pagans? Where would we do that? You know, they have all these creepy mega churches, but we don't have that capability. One, because we're not that supported by the government still. Just like, you know, I'm not saying that we have anything to do with them, but Luciferians and Satanists, like, what was somebody put the Ten Commandments up in a city? I remember reading that. And so they had a statue of Baphomet erected. And I'm like, yes! Yes! And I support that, because that means that if they have that much of a voice, we should have a voice too. And I think right next to Baphomet, there should be a statue of Hecate.
Yes.
But I think if we were more recognized and supported, I think we could do these things. But then the other part of the equation is getting people to come out and say, yes, I'm a pagan, using that umbrella term, whatever form, Dianic or Odinism or Denarian or whatever form they are, Wiccan. Getting people to come out and say, yes, I am. In the open. So many people that I know are in the community, they don't wear their pentagram or their pentacle like I'm wearing right now. You know, they're still unsure of how people will perceive them. They're still unsure if they will be discriminated against. I actually had a boss that, at a previous job, I was ran out of my job because she was a devout Christian, like one of those really creepy, strict Christians that are like, no gays, no blah, 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 you know, you're very cut and dry Christian, I should say. And when she found out I was a pagan, there was one child that we had at the facility that was very mentally ill, and she believed that she was being attacked by demons. Okay, and she was a schizophrenic, a very young schizophrenic, which is sad. And the co-workers there had watched Supernatural. I wasn't even in the state when this happened, by the way. Like, I was visiting my ex-boyfriend in New York when this went down. And so, because these two co-workers had watched Supernatural, they lined all the doorways and the windows with salt, telling the little girl that nothing could cross the threshold. You know, she would be protected. It was a way to pacify a child, a tiny child. She was, like, 10, which is really sad. And so when I got back into town, I wasn't even in the state when this went down. I had no connection or communication with these people. But when I got back the next day, I wasn't even done serving breakfast to these children when this woman came in and started ripping me a new one. Like, the children weren't even out of the room yet. They were in the process of leaving. And it scared them because these were very vulnerable children. And she starts saying, you need to keep your damn pagan beliefs to yourself. I don't care what hoodoo, voodoo bullshit you do behind closed doors. I've got people putting salt on windows and doorways, and I don't need that shit. And she goes, so just keep your pagan beliefs to yourself. And this woman was so enraged. It was just pure blind hatred. But, like, the vein was popping out of her little forehead. She was bright red. She was, like, salivating. I'd never seen anybody get so mad that they salivated. It looked like a feral dog. And I stood there because I had no idea what the hell she was talking about. I just got off the plane. My plane landed late. I had a red-eye flight. And I was there at 5 in the morning to make breakfast for these kids. Finally, I found out through another coworker what had happened. And I said, how are you going to hold me accountable for the actions of others? I wasn't even in the state. I didn't communicate with them and say, oh, yeah, mine is always the fault. Oh, yeah, burn some sage while you're at it. Like, I would have told them to at least bless the walls with some water, bitches. But it's the fact that there is still that blind hatred, that blind ignorance, that lack of understanding. And people sometimes, they mask their anger and their hatred with fear. Because people fear what they don't understand. They fear what they don't know. And I think that is one of the driving forces for our society, even here in the United States. It's fear.
Yeah.
Oh, he's a different skin tone. Oh, she's a different gender. Oh, they identify as a different gender than what they were born. What the fuck is shit? Are you in the bedroom when they're doing what they do? Are you watching and critiquing? No. Are you their motivational coach?
No.
So what do you care what they do behind closed doors? If I met a Luciferian on the street, I would embrace them and say, hey, let's sit down. What do you do? I'll tell you what I do. I wish people were more open-minded. And so because of that, that stigma, that fear still, I don't know if in the next 10 years pagans will ever have an open public facility where they can openly worship with each other without that fear. Will it be vandalized? Yeah. There are synagogues. They're still being vandalized by people. Just happened in Mississippi the other day. Luciferian state worshipers, I'm sure they have all kinds of vandalism on their property. So it would have to be a government-sanctioned and protected facility. You know, I would expect the same treatment as the other churches do. Like, we better be tax-exempt and all that good crap. Because it's bullshit. I'm not paying taxes if the Presbyterians or the herd of Lutherans down the street aren't paying taxes either. So it would be a huge push for the pagan community if something happened. Because if you can make it happen in one city, it'll be a chain effect. It'll be a chain reaction. It'll show others that it can happen. And if I could participate or donate or do anything I can to support something like that actually occurring, well, I would be very proud and very happy to do so. Because then that means one day when I have children or grandchildren, and someone goes through my trunk of things after I've passed away, it says, oh, look what Grandma did. That might be a nice path. I want to know that my children and my grandchildren have that right to openly worship. And that we're not hiding out in a nudist colony outside of the city limits, where you still hear farmers shoot off guns just to scare us. You know, I'd like to know that my kids can wear the pentacle or the pentagram of their choice openly at work. Then no one will even think a second thing of it. That would be a beautiful dream. And sometimes that's all it is. Martin Luther King had a dream. It happened. I think that's good too.
Do you create new spells and rituals as part of your practice, or do you tend to stick to a traditional script?
That's a good one. One second. So, I think the best way to learn anything is to review the history or review the classics. You know, you can't write a great sailor's novel if you don't read Iliad and the Odyssey first. You know, you can't write a good horror movie unless you've read Edgar Allan Poe. You know, learn from the people who were there before you, and then build on it. And you can personalize it and make it your own, as long as it has that kind of set core values. For example, whenever my friends have a new baby, I always make them a puppet. You know, and it's a doll that's filled with healing herbs or crystals. But I always fill my puppets with rose quartz, for love, amethyst for love and acceptance and understanding. I fill it with little sachets of lavender to soothe the baby. And I know it's expensive, but I'll even throw in a vanilla bean inside, because the vanilla bean, it represents comfort, it represents nurturing, it soothes and eases. And then I do a little sachet of oatmeal so that they are itchy and they sleep at night and they're content. And oatmeal always makes it feel like your belly is full. You know, it's a sense of comfort. And so I'll make these babies new papas every time they're born. And it doesn't matter their gender, because I don't make them color-coded. You know, I'm not going to make a blue poppy for a boy or a green poppy for a girl, because I'm not going to push those gender stereotypes. So all my poppets are yellow, like the sun, or like the sunflowers for our estate. And that's a gender-neutral color, and it represents happiness and old. And yellow has a very positive connotation. And babies see bright colors first. And so I know that maybe one of the first things they'll see is that little poppet smiling at them. And it makes me happy knowing that they have that. But if someone is having an issue with a coworker and they come to me, you know, I'll tell them, tape a mirror under your desk, because everything that person casts out to you will be reflected back to them. If someone is feeling very sick, you know, I'll crack an egg under their bed. You let the egg sit for a day, it absorbs all that negativity, and then you take it out in the yard and you bury it. You know, if someone comes up to me and says, oh, I have a wart, you know, we'll take the potato and we'll rub it on the wart, and then we'll go bury it out in the yard, and hopefully that wart is absorbed into the potato, and then that person, you know, is a little cured. And I'm sure that there are chemical reactions and explanations for all these things, because what is magic but a question or a problem we have yet to solve? You know, biochemistry was once considered to be magic. Now we understand that. Astronomy and astrology, they came from each other. I mean, they were considered forms of magic. They were divination. You looked at the stars and you learned the meaning behind it. Alchemy was considered a form of magic. It's still considered a form of magic, but how do you take gold powders and purify them and make them into pure gold? And like, how do you melt that down? Oh, well, you have to add another element of copper to melt that down. What is cooking but magic? And that's what I do. I'm a chef. And so by putting positive intentions in everything that I make, it makes people feel warm and welcome. It's the literal essence of hospitality. And I think that's what paganism should be about. It's what it is about for most people, is hospitality. And the definition of hospitality is welcoming a stranger into your home, giving them sanctuary, giving them food, making them feel safe, and maybe helping them with a problem that maybe they didn't know they had, or maybe they had but they didn't think anyone could help them with. And so those are some of the core aspects of everyday life.
Does food figure into your religious life?
Religious and personal. And professional.
Yeah.
I've been a professional chef since 2006. I've cooked all around the world. Nice. I've been to Antarctica, Hawaii, Alaska. I worked for a traveling circus in the East Coast for 2 years. And I cooked for their staff and their performers. And I lived in a tiny little 10x10 camper that fit on the back of a regular truck bed and used a porta potty for 2 years. Never underestimate the beauty of a flushing toilet. I may be pagan, but that doesn't mean we're all out crapping in the woods and we're happy about it. Sometimes you gotta do what you gotta do, but that's not the core belief there. But food is magic. I mean, think about your favorite food dish that you had when you were a child. It could be something as simple as Velveeta mac and cheese, which none of it's real, it's all processed crap. But it's the feeling that you get from eating that whole mac. Maybe Nana made it for you. Maybe your Aunt Terry made a special type of like trail mix cookie, and you eat that and you feel comforted. That's what it should be about. That's what food should be about. That's what magic should be about. Because how do you give someone that feeling of comfort and happiness? How do you make sure that they're full? Or they're getting the nutrients that they need? I mean, every spice, for example, in culinary and paganism, it has a magical purpose, and it has a medicinal purpose. So you eat cinnamon, cinnamon's supposed to attract love and passion and make you happy. But on the medicinal side of it, it lowers your blood pressure and it helps with heart issues. So you have to learn both sides of the coin if you're going to become a kitchen witch, so to say, you need to know what each herb and seasoning does on a magical level and on a medicinal level. I would love to open up a food truck that says healing food, and it would be dishes made from items that incorporate both. So we say, oh, parsley is good for bad breath, good for water.
Thanks. What do you think is the pros and cons of being a solitary practitioner versus being a member of a coven?
Well, the con is I'm lazy. And the pro is I'm lazy. So it's up to me if I want to come out and socialize in the lobby. Right now I'm very busy. I just acquired a new position. And so I'm trying to learn the ins and outs. And I'm also trying to get like a part-time job to supplement the remaining income that I still need. And so right now I'm doing that. And I'm having a procedure done. And my car broke down, so I have to go get another car. So I have all these little elements in it. And so by being part of a coven at this time in my life, I would be expected to show up. Everybody has a part. Everybody participates. Everybody brings an item for a potluck afterwards. You know, what we call cakes, nails, Catholic call Eucharist and wine, because they stole it from us. But right now, it's a definite pro because I just can't make it. And it, in order to be there, you really need to be there. So if you're feeling sick or you've got personal problems, don't step in a circle. It's like going into someone's home and they have all white tile on the floor and it's clean and it's pristine. And you come in covered in mud and you track mud all into their house. Like, it's very personal. So if you're not feeling great, ask for a healing ritual, but don't step into circles. Because when you step in a circle, you bring all your shit with you. So it's kind of like that old expression, check your baggage at the door. Right now, I've got too much baggage to step in a circle with other people, and it's not fair. So until I sort out my stuff, then I'll come back and participate. So there are pros and cons. I say the con is sometimes you feel lonely. You know, it's just me to see my altar. My boyfriend's not the same practicing thing. And sometimes it's just me reading my little books. But I found activities that we can do together that makes him feel incorporated. Like, we do a lot of gardening. We go to a lot of greenhouses. We go on nature walks. You know, that's not just a bonding activity because we're partners, but it's also a religious bonding for me, and it's something that he enjoys. So he may not know that I'm recanting spells in my mind, or I'm making an offering in Hecate when I leave a handful of coins with a tree. Like, it doesn't have to be obvious. So those are some of the pros and cons of being by yourself. But I'd say the most wonderful part about being in a coven with other people is there's this crazy sense of silence that falls around you right after the circle's been cast and everybody's there. And it's with open love and open trust, open heart and open mind. So you're willingly going into the circle with other people and you're exchanging energies and you're winding them, weaving them together like a tapestry. And at the end of the ritual, if you envision, well, we made this tapestry, and put it up in your heart, like on your wall, and know that you had that tapestry. And sometimes, if I'm feeling really bad about, like, I don't have time to be with others, I'll mentally go over those tapestries you passed and be like, oh, yeah, I remember that Samhain we did when we went on that, you know, soul search, and we went through the woods, and we had different activities that we did. Oh, I remember Ostara, you know, with Tepiqua, when we made little balls and we threw them into the fire to, like, burn away things that had bothered us from the previous year. Oh, I remember when we did Yule and everybody did the secret stag exchange. So I highly encourage people to step in and interact with each other. But if you're not in a good space or you don't have the time, don't beat yourself up about it. It's like I tell Christians and Catholic friends, you know, you don't have to go to church every Sunday to be a good follower of your faith or your belief. You just have to carry it in your heart and try to do at least one small good deed every day. It's the little things that change the world overnight. It's not the big thing. Sometimes bigger approaches are more catastrophic than doing simple kindness.
What have been the best and worst things about being involved with the local pagan community?
I think like any other group of, you know, a mass group of people, there's always that certain level of drama. You know, he fed, she fed, and, you know, there's a witch war, and so-and-so hurt my feelings, and fuck them, I'm going to put their picture in a jar with broken glass and shake it up and throw it into the river because they hurt me. It's like, oh, get over it. It's like, you're like taking Harry Potter and mixing it with Jerry Springer. Like, that's bullshit. That's not what we're supposed to be doing. So that's one issue. There's always somebody's ego is bigger than another person's. But you're going to find that in any group. A small selection of human beings, you're going to get that. You're going to get very specific patterns of behavior, regardless of what religious or spiritual path that person is. One common misconception that I personally really disdain. I don't use the term hate because hate is too powerful for anything. You shouldn't hate anything in this world or in your lifetime. You can dislike things. So disdain is probably the strongest feeling I can muster. And that is people misconstruing that pagans are openly promiscuous. And it's like, okay. People are like, oh, well, all pagans are polyamorous, which means we have multiple partners. And it's like, well, maybe there are more pagans who have that lifestyle choice, because that is a lifestyle choice that has nothing to do with the religion or the spiritual path. Maybe they're just more open about it because our system is a lot more accepting. Okay? But there's that common misconception that society has that we're all out having orgies in the woods. And it's like, I'm sorry, but I know I don't like getting on in the leaves, and I don't like ticks, and I'm pretty sure you don't either. So regardless of your religion, I think most people have, you know, standard. I like a bed and pillows and be comfy and indoors with air conditioning. So that is one thing I really disdain. It's like when I tell people I'm pagan, they're like, oh, so you have orgies? I'm like, no, I've never witnessed one. You're more likely to have had one than me, probably, because that's a lifestyle choice. So look at swingers, for example. There's a lot of Buddhist swingers, Jewish swingers, Catholic swingers, Christian swingers, but we don't have that connotation that, oh, all Christians are swingers, or all Christians are polyamorous. And I think because of the fact that we're so accepting, we're just so open about everything. Because I get to meet one that's like super closeted. We might be at our jobs, and that's just because we don't want to lose our job. We gotta pay rent too.
Right.
We can't magically whip up a spell and have money. Okay, if we did, none of us would be working. Alright, just throwing that out there. So, I think because we're more accepting and we're more open that we have that connotation. And I've come across a lot of people that are attempting to join paganism and, you know, the different branches of it, because they think, oh, it's a fuck fest. It's like, no, actually, that's not what this is. That is a lifestyle choice. You want to dress up like a bear and go to a hotel and get it on furry style? That's a lifestyle choice. But you might happen to be Christian, too. So that doesn't mean all Christians are dressing up like gerbils and getting it on. Same with paganism. I wish people understood that. So when new people come in, they have that. Or, oh, I want to be a high priestess, or I want to be a warlock. And you're like, okay, you're already bullshit from the beginning. That's cool. Why do you want to be? And once again, it comes back to that core central belief, intent. Oh, well, I want to be a high priestess because I want people to respect me. Or I want that guy at work to finally notice me. It's like, no, that's manipulating someone else's free will, which is a big no-no. You're not allowed to do that. Nor could you do that. You don't have that capability. So when people come in either with intentions or they want to get rich quick or they want people to worship them, which is something I've seen. I call it the goddess complex or the god complex. And that can be found in all religions. It's most commonly found in politics. I mean, look at our shitty orange president. You know, he wants to be a tiny god with little bitty hands on his Lego wall. But you find people coming in that want to assert power and dominance over others. And so those are things I really don't like about common misconceptions about what our belief is or what we do. So whatever your sexual preference is or what you like to do behind closed doors, lifestyle choice, not religion, not spiritual conflict. Don't assert your dominance or ill intent on others. just comes back to you in the end. So I'd say those are the things that I really dislike about our belief system.
What about the positives?
There's a lot of positives. Be naked. Edward's one, nobody cares. Some people do. Optional. I like the freedom. So I like the freedom choice. And what I really appreciate more than any other aspect is the diversity. There are old pagans, young pagans, new pagans, experienced pagans, black pagans, brown pagans. I don't think Trump's pagan, so I can't say orange pagan. But there might be one with a bad spray tan. We don't know. It's just they're all different types of pagans. And what I love about going out to Gaia, they have like a laid-back Labor Day and Memorial Day weekend. I wouldn't go to laid-back. Don't take your kids to laid-back, because like, there's some weird stuff that goes on out there. But Memorial Day weekend. When I was in the showers, it's a co-ed shower. And so there are men and women and trans and all kinds of people in there. But one thing I noticed is there were little kids running around. And at first, like, the societal part of me is like, oh my God. And then I was like, oh, like, how trusting is this community that you can just, like, a kid run around naked and nobody cares? And that's because we feel safe in our community. Also, they do background checks at Gaia, so everybody's safe. Like, you've been checked out before. But it's knowing that they had that ability to be so free. And there was like a little circle chain in which they were making like little dandelion crowns with the kids. And people were just walking around all around them. You know, some with togas, some with, you know, some not clothes, some clothes. It didn't matter. But it was the fact that it was just that sense of freedom. So many aspects of to be who you are, be the best that you can be. And what I like about it is there's not that sense of looming. You know, you're not made to feel bad for every independent thought, look, dream, or statement that you make. You feel better coming out of ritual than when you went in. And to me, I think that's what all religions and spiritual paths should be. You should feel better after doing what you do with your group or by yourself than when you went in. And if you don't feel good about coming out of church, if you don't feel good about yourself, or when you come out of, you know, whatever temple you're in, then maybe you really need to question if that belief system is for you. Because it should make you feel good about you. It should make you feel better about the world. And then, above all, it should be about love, acceptance, and it should inspire you. And if your faith or your spiritual pathway isn't doing that, then do yourself a favor, because this lifetime is so short. Move on. It's like a bad relationship or a bad job. Sometimes you quit, sometimes you get fired, or sometimes it's a mutual termination. But that doesn't mean that when you move on to the next thing that you have to harbor those ill feelings. You don't have to start a new relationship with the baggage you had with the last person you were with. You don't have to go into a new job with PTSD and be like, oh, the last three jobs treated me like crap. I guess this one will too. It's like, no, you're supposed to move on and progress and become a better human being. So if your relationship's not working, if your job's not working, if your faith isn't working, then move on. Find something that will. And don't be bitter about it. That's the one thing that I just can't stand the most in life, is when people are like, oh, well, he treated me like shit, you know, fucking blah, blah, blah. Like, no. You loved each other at one point, yes? Yeah? Did you share something together? Did you really commonly love that person? And then things just didn't turn out right, or a series of events, or maybe it just wasn't the right person. But don't hold on to that embittered feeling. Oh, that church was crap for me, you know, it's revenge. Oh, that job was terrible. No, be grateful, because that job helped put food in your belly. It helped pay for your car. It helped keep your house afloat, or you paid rent, or you paid mortgage. That person showed you that maybe they made a broccoli casserole, and now you know you don't like broccoli. You know, it could be something as simple as realizing the things that each of those experiences gave you, and then moving on and finding the one that works. Because you can't truly move on if you're still holding on to all the icky stuff. It's kind of like a self-inflicted rule of three.
And final question, is there anything else you wish to share about anything?
I I know that they have taken, you know, the Pledge of Allegiance out of a lot of schools. And, you know, on the back of everybody's money, it says, "In God we trust," and people want to go on about God, God, God. I really wish that all religions would realize that when these things say God, it's not specifying a specific God. It can be your God. It can be your God S. Just throw another D and an EFS on there. Don't get so offended at every little thing. Instead, sometimes just try to incorporate it so that it fits more into your life as an individual. I get so hung up on all the tiny details. And I wish everybody would just remember that whatever spiritual pathway you have, or whatever religion you have, it's just one facet of one giant diamond that we call humans. We call the world, the universe. And above all, I wish more people cared about the planet. I mean, we're losing coral reefs at a 39% rate. We have global warming. It's very real. Bees are becoming extinct. We're killing off dolphins, and turtles are choking on plastic bags thinking they're jellyfish. I don't think it matters what religion or spiritual pathway you have. Everybody should be trying to help the world. And whether that's recycling or it's switching to hemp genes, I guess they are making hemp genes now, hemp coal. But without this world, it doesn't matter what religion or race or socioeconomic background or how much money you have in the bank. If we can't keep this planet alive, we all die. And I really wish people took it more seriously. Stop using pesticides that you know hurt plants. Stop eating crap from, what is that, Minnesota company? Mm-hmm. They're bad, okay? Try not to take in so many preservatives. Don't beat yourself up about every choice you make. If you want a piece of chocolate cake, eat a piece of chocolate cake. If you're diabetic, then just make sure it's sugar-free. But at the end of the day, just remember that you're only human. You're beautiful, and you're flawed, and you're perfect, and you're imperfect. And I just wish more people understood that we're all one entity on a single rock, and we just gotta keep this rock afloat, or there won't be any diversity. Embrace each other instead of looking at each other and saying, "Oh, well, they're this person or they're that person." But why don't you just look at the person for who they are, and not their belief or their political or their skin tone or their religion or their gender or gender identity or freaking gender preference or sexuality. It doesn't matter in the end. We're all here. I just wish more people saw that. Thank you. Thanks.